Good afternoon, Dave. How you living in Arizona?
It's sunny. I've been applying lots of sunscreen, just copious amounts. Yeah, I decided recently that I'd never want to be sunburned again. And so far, so good. It hasn't happened recently.
The epidermis. It's your largest organ, Dave. Protect your skin.
That's true. I want to keep beautiful. It's a priority for me.
I'm glad, Dave. Would you consider yourself a fairly complexioned man?
Yeah, I consider myself a pale man. I'm comfortable with it, and I want to stay that way. I don't want to be red-faced.
Well, welcome. We're glad to have you for another episode of Off the Chain with Dave and Steele. Today, we have an especially exciting episode. We're going to be talking about baby birthday parties, something that we've both gained some recent insight into. We have a very special segment of To the Limit, where we share incredible stories of human endurance. We've got a small talk, which is always great to help you in your next awkward conversation have something to talk about. We've got a very short but powerful segment, Diesel, Running on Gas. We're going to update you with the latest developments in the life of Vin Diesel. We've got an Ask Off the Chain, we've got Unchained Melodies, and we've got a Book Wisdom. So a lot to pack in today.
Let's do it, Steele. So you recently had a birthday party at your house, huh?
Well, it wasn't at our house, because this thing was a party, Dave. Our house couldn't contain it. We had a birthday party for our son, Cedar. He was 1 year old last week, and so we thought the idea of the first birthday, a lot of people do their parties for their kids, but at the age of one, we thought, no way, this party's about us. We made it through a year of parenting, and it's been challenging and it's been hard. We've had ups and downs, but we wanted to throw a party basically to celebrate the fact that we had survived a year of parenting. And to bring a bunch of people together that loved our baby and loved us and just had a good party. So we rented out a room at the community center and we did it
Oh
there.
yeah, that's always good. A good start.
So we brought in balloons, Dave. We had chalk. We wrote a little message on a chalkboard. Tons of snacks. My wife got snacks to feed like four parties. It was a lot of snacks.
What kind of snacks are these? They're not child appropriate. It's more adult related snacks.
Well, I mean, no. I mean, it was Laurel approved snacks, so it was mainly healthy stuff. So lots of fruit. We had tons of strawberries. We had some melon. We had some pineapple. The desserts were all vegan so that Cedar and Mom could eat them. So Laurel's sister made these incredible vegan cupcakes. I never thought I would say that sentence, but they were really, really good.
I think I will never say that sentence, Steele. Incredible vegan cupcakes. I don't think that'll ever happen again. That's the one time I just said
They're big in Madison, man. There's a market for them here. There's a whole
it.
vegan bakery here, Dave. You have to check it out.
Okay.
Like
Yeah, next time
carrot
I'm up.
pulp. Some carrot pulp. Put that in there. Thicken it up. It's a good emulsifier.
Yeah, applesauce. You use applesauce instead of oil or eggs, I believe.
It's healthy. And it
Yeah.
tastes great. So we had that. We had some pretzels and chips because those are Cedar's favorite. But the best part was we had a bunch of neighborhood kids come along. Cedar's like their little brother. They're like 5 to 7 years old. One of the little girls, she served herself a plate of food, and all it was cheese. It was just a plate of like 25 slices of cheese. It was amazing. And she ate most of it. I was impressed. She's probably constipated for days.
If you know what you want, you go for it.
Yeah.
Like if it's a plate full of vegan cupcakes, plate full of cheese, whenever I go to a party, Steele, I zero in on what I want and I fill my plate up with it. I don't waste time with the crackers or the cauliflower tray. I don't want any cauliflower.
So I'm very different. I go through the line and I always take like a little bit of everything, just about. And I'll take more of the stuff that I really like, but I can't just be like, I'm only getting the stuff that I really like. I don't know why I'm like that, but you're the other way. You're just like, I'm only getting what I want.
Yeah, it's a mistake. Like you see this wide variety of food at the party and like, oh, I should try everything, right? No, you shouldn't, because you're not going to like most of the stuff. Just go in, Like, I like strawberries. I'm going to get the strawberries. I'm not going to mess around with this other stuff.
So we went to a wedding recently that had a buffet. How'd you
Yes.
handle that?
I got a ton of the hummus,
Yeah.
the pita chips, and I don't remember what else was there. I just got a ton of the hummus and pita chips, essentially.
Dave, that was like the best wedding meal I'd ever had. It was mostly vegetarian. It was like healthy food, Mediterranean. I packed that plate twice full. I was like, it wasn't very healthy because of the quantities that I ate, but the food itself was really good. There was a bunch of olives. I got some olives with garlic in it.
Oh yeah, I got the olives too, actually. That's the third thing on my plate was olives, pita chips, and hummus.
You're ready for Southern California, Dave.
I need to move there. When we were down there, as soon as we're driving in, I'm like to my wife, like, why don't we live here? What are we doing with our lives that we don't live here? I don't understand.
Well, wait. After you spent a little time on the freeway, did you realize why you don't live there?
Yeah, that like the next day, my wife's like, "This is why we don't live here." Like, okay, this makes sense now.
That's how I feel when I go to San Diego. I'm like, why don't I live here yet? That's great.
Yeah.
But in any case, we had this first birthday party, Dave, and we did really nothing. I mean, we didn't have any planned stuff. It was just people, adults talking. But next year, when Cedar's two, he may be a little more conscious. He was teething and he was grumpy, so he was like groggy the whole party, so it was fine. But for the 2-year-old party, we need some ideas. And I know you had triplets and you've celebrated the second birthday. What kind of baby party ideas would you have for us?
Yeah, once you get to two, it's gotta be about the kids. I remember, at one Christmas, like they kind of just laid on the presents, kind of tore at the paper a little bit. They didn't really know what was going on. Then at two, Christmas was just awesome.
Was it?
They're going nuts. Everybody's tearing at everything. Just the difference between their awareness from one to two, as far as celebrations goes, is fantastic.
I feel like Cedar's more interested in the wrapping than the gifts for right now. It's like, why bother? Don't buy a toy. Just give him some wrapping paper.
The cutest thing at Christmas was once we'd unwrapped all the presents, it was the next day. Juniper is pointing at the tree and she's like, "Mo? Mo? Mo?" I have to explain. No, it's over, Juniper. We're all done. I explained to her, "We're actually going to take this tree down soon," and it was like it did not go well. There's just tears. No one, like, they still, like, months later, they're still talking about taking the Christmas tree down. They're still unhappy that it happened.
Wow, Dave, sounds like you lived right, though. I mean, way to break her heart early.
But as far as like birthday party, we this year we're like, we're gonna do a party, and then when it came down to it, we just didn't. We went to the zoo instead.
Nice.
Like, what will the girls like more? Will they like getting a lot of people together at the park and we have a party, or would they rather go to the zoo and see a tiger? And clearly, like, the party would have been more for like me to invite my friends and stuff. Yeah, we just went to the zoo.
That sounds good. Maybe we'll do an event party next year. I don't know. Until they're old enough to really want a party, I don't know how
And
much it's for kids.
they will. Like, next year, I bet my girls will be real excited about their party. And Cedar, the rest of his life, he's probably going to be wanting you to throw him a birthday party. So I don't think you have to right now. I didn't do it. I was fine with
Have the girls gone to other people's birthday parties?
it. Yeah, they've gone to a couple. I liked one of them had a huge chalkboard that all the kids could draw on. The girls loved that.
Oh, nice. Are they of an
And
age where they could do like a bouncy castle? Would that be fun for them?
oh yeah. Yeah, I mean, taking Cedar on a bouncy castle at this point, I bet he'd be way into it. Yeah, the girls loved it. We went to my father-in-law's neighborhood Halloween party. They had like six bouncy castles apparently, 'cause it's a very wealthy community. And we went there early before the kids came, so my daughters were just like, they had the time of their lives. Yeah, if you want to blow it out, still get yourself three bouncy castles, slides, chalkboard. I think bubbles are really important. Kids love bubbles.
The tricky thing is, it's in March, and Wisconsin's marches are kind of unpredictable. It kind of has to be an indoor affair for now. But I'll think about it, unless we move to San Diego.
Yeah, San Diego would open up a whole world of possibilities for you. I would recommend moving to San Diego if you really want to have a good birthday party.
Yeah, that's the first step on the. Okay. So the other thought that I had was Cedar is physically fearless right now. He loves wrestling, and I think if we had the opportunity for a bouncy castle, that would change his life.
It's awesome. And yeah, people always talk about their fearless children. All my daughters are very fearful. Like they're not going to just do crazy stuff. And it's kind of awesome because we have three of them. If they were fearless, there would be serious problems
hard.
Every time we went outside. So they're all like afraid, which we've probably taught them, which probably isn't right, but it's great. It makes it a lot easier just to walk down the block. Because people were always like, what do you do when one runs in the opposite direction of the others? And I'm just like, that never happens. They wouldn't do that. They're too afraid.
That sounds great. Well, that's a kind of perfect segue, really. We're talking about incredible fear as a parenting technique. And we're going to talk next about fearlessness and what human beings can accomplish when they conquer their fears and pursue their dreams. This is one of my favorite segments, Dave, one that you introduced me to. That you have a great love for.
Which I'm also a huge fan of the Eagles. So this week, I wanted to talk to you about a book I read a little while back called The Long Walk. It was ghostwritten, but the story supposedly is from a guy named Sławomir Rawitz. So he was in the Polish army back in the early 40s, and he was captured by the Russians and sent to Siberian Gulag, the prison camps out way in the eastern Russia with all the winter and all the terror, which I'm sure you're familiar with the gulag, right?
Definitely. I'm terrified of gulags.
as are my daughters. They do not like the gulag whatsoever. This story is awesome, and it's actually come under fire. Some people aren't sure if this really happened, and there are some details in the story that might make you suspect whether it's really true. But he and a small group of men escape the camp in the dead winter, which really wasn't that hard to do because they didn't need a lot of guards, because you escape the camp in the dead winter in the gulag, you're probably going to freeze to death. And so these guys, they have no supplies really, no way to carry water, very little food, and they just start walking. Their initial plan is like, we're going to walk to Mongolia, which, you know, that's a pretty significant walk.
So hold on, how many guys are there?
There's about five of them, and along the way, they pick up a 17-year-old girl that's just out in the wilderness as well. So it ends up being about six of them that are going to walk from the gulag to Mongolia. This is their plan. We're walking. We don't even really have shoes, but we can do this.
And do they have language in common? Are they all Polish, or are they from all over the world, or where are they from?
There's one American guy, one Polish, I think a couple Russian. The girl is Russian, and that's as much as I know. But yeah, they're kind of from all over the world, but they wow. Team up and they just start going. They have to get very close. They're either going to all die or really band together, because it's so cold. They're huddling into packs, sleeping together. And they're walking, and by the time they get to Mongolia, they've already had like a ridiculously hard time and adventure, but they find that Mongolia is now communist as well. They're not sleeping in Mongolia either.
Got to keep going.
So, Steele, if you're walking there, where are you going? Where are you headed now? You're in Mongolia. 1940s.
You can't. I mean, you probably don't want to go to China. You can't walk to Japan or Korea.
Uh-uh.
I mean, you could, but you got to go through China to go to Korea. You keep going south?
You do.
India, Pakistan?
That is what they do. They're like, we're in Mongolia. We kind of got nowhere to go. How about India?
How about it?
Yeah, you know, why not? What's between Mongolia and India anyway?
It's just like the Gobi Desert?
Yes. So they start walking into the Gobi Desert. They don't have water
What?
bottles, Steele.
Why? I guess, well, I know why, but they decided the Gobi Desert is better than communism.
They better than going back to the gulag. They're gonna die in the gulag, probably. And they go. They have no water bottles. Two of the group ends up dying in the Gobi Desert. And the thing that they figure out that saves the rest of their lives is they start catching snakes and drinking their blood. That's how they make it through the Gobi Desert.
Wow.
And so they make it through the Gobi Desert. Two fewer dudes. What do you, can you think of what the next major obstacle is going to be here?
I think there's a large mountain range in northern India, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, it's called the Himalayas, Steele.
Oh, yes, the Himalayas. I've heard of them.
This is the largest mountain range in the world, and these guys still don't have anything. They're starving. They don't have food, and they have to walk through the Himalayas. But fortunately, I think somewhere between the Gobi and the Himalayas, they meet a guy that gives them some food, and the author talks about how the guy gives them salt. He gets to put salt on his food, and he hasn't had salt for like 6 or 8 months, and he can't believe how wonderful salt is. That's like there's like a several paragraphs about this.
That sounds like everyday life in England.
There is a blandness to their cuisine. So they go through the Himalayas. Obviously, it's very difficult. They don't have a map. They can see the sun. They know which way south is. And they know basically India's southwest. And actually, another man dies in the Himalayas. And another man's about to give up, but they're able to get him to go. And as they get to the other side of the Himalayas, they're about to come down into India. They see something still. A mythical beast.
What?
Yes.
No.
Yes, what mythical beast do you think would be possible to see in the Himalayas?
Yeti.
Yes, they see
No. No.
a And so not
This is
only,
real?
yes, it's in the book. He talks about seeing the Yeti.
I gotta read this book.
So the basically at this point, then it's just they walk through India and they're okay, they're safe, things are okay. But this whole walk through the desert, through the snow, through the Himalayas, culminating with seeing the Yeti.
Do they talk to them? I mean, do they interact with the Yeti?
He's a little bit
Or just
far
see it?
off, and
Okay.
at this time, there's an accident, and another member of their party dies, like right as they see the Yeti. So they're kind of distracted from what's going on. But the whole time I'm reading this book, I'm thinking, this is great. I can't believe what these guys are doing. And then they see a Yeti.
It caused you to question everything, huh?
Yes.
You're like, damn it, is this fiction?
But really just neat, impressive. Researching it now on the internet, it sounds like some people have made this walk, but not necessarily that group of people. But I believe that someone has made this walk and that they did survive all these really interesting things. And I don't know if they saw a Yeti, but I don't know. Maybe they saw a
Talk about taking it to the limits, Dave.
Yeti.
I love that story. So the name of the book again was The Long
The
Walk.
Long Walk. The author, I can't say his name still. We'll put it up on the site. Slawomir Rawitz. Yeah, you next. If you have another son, you might want to look into that name. It's beautiful.
It could be Slawomir Thorbert. Anyway, all right, Dave. So here's my contribution to the limits. I read this great story in the New York Times Magazine about a woman who's a world explorer and just driven by this desire to explore and to push herself into extreme situations. She's a 42-year-old Swiss woman. Her name is Sarah Marquis. And most of the past 4 years, she has spent walking by herself. She's covered around 10,000 miles. She has gone from Siberia through the Gobi Desert,
Yes.
which is what your story made me think of.
Yes.
She traveled through China, Laos, Thailand. She took a cargo boat to Brisbane, Australia, and walked across Australia, a little under 9,000 mile trek.
And Does it talk about how she's equipped for this? Like what she's carrying, what she's doing?
Yeah, she goes alone, so she's only equipped with what she can carry. She takes a 75-pound pack and a custom-made cart that's like a cross between a wheelbarrow and a giant roller bag. It's a dry land sled. And then once she did Australia, she said, I'm not going to slaughter animals anymore. It feels cruel, like killing a friend. So she would carry her own supplies, rice and hard biscuits.
Hard biscuit.
It's nuts, man.
That's like the 1800s steel. That's what they would carry on like sea ships.
Yeah, hardtack. So this is what she took with her. 5 pairs of underwear. You can't have too many underwear. A large pocket knife. Antibiotics. Tea tree oil for massaging your feet. A solar powered charger. A beacon, a BlackBerry, a satellite phone. Crocs. Take care of your feet, man. A compass. A tiny emergency stash of amphetamines.
Well, yeah. Was this
And she
was
brought.
it a cocaine or more of like a methamphetamine?
I didn't say in the article. I think she wanted to keep her out of trouble with the law enforcement. But she also brought pink merino wool pajamas. She said, you put them on and you feel good. You feel gorgeous. So you gotta have a little bit of aesthetic appeal on that trip.
And still, wool is one of the only fabrics that will still provide warmth for you, even when it's wet. So that is a great fabric to have.
So she's smart. She's done this before. When she goes back to Northwest Australia next year, she's going to go with just a sarong and a knife. That's all she's going to take. But a lot of times she's like, hey, this is a place I really want to visit. And then when she gets there, she realizes this is actually an awful place. It's terrible. It's totally not worth it. But the pushing herself and getting sick and having these crazy adventures is the thing that drives her. So what she'll do is she goes back to Switzerland, she works for some money, and then she leaves on this another extreme challenge. So she went up to Canada, she did Algonquin Park, which is really remote. She didn't know how to portage, but she took a canoe and so kind of taught herself how to do this. She got attacked by beavers at one point when she was camping in
Wait
Patagonia.
a second. What would a beaver attack consist of?
Teeth, man, teeth and tail. Beavers are fierce. I imagine.
Apparently.
So she says she has this wild call from inside of me. And she's written a book as well. I'll look that up and we'll put it on the website. But she makes videos of herself at various points along the trek. And you can see several of her videos on YouTube. They're incredible. So she's like emaciated, eating weird stuff. She's just been on, she's run out of gear, and she does drink snake blood, just like your guys.
Yes. I love it. I used to work for a wilderness program called Anasazi here in Arizona, and we'd go out and we'd carry all our food, just very primitive supplies, and it was essentially for kids that had problems at home, and they would go out to the desert and kind of learn about themselves and kind of just gain confidence and really gain self-esteem. A lot of these kids had never done hard things before, so when they were able to survive out in the desert, it's just a beautiful experience for them. But I would always carry a machete with me, Steele, and you could use a machete for a lot of awesome stuff. I always had a big machete.
That's great, Dave. So we should check out more of Miss Marquis, Sarah Marquis. And I think what's particularly credible to me about it is that she's traveling through all of these regions as a lone woman,
That's kind of
which is
scary.
extraordinarily dangerous and difficult because humans can be awful, especially men, and especially to women. So she's very brave, very adventurous, very wild.
Well, yeah, I want to read her book. And
Yeah,
most
me
of
too.
all, I want you to write a poem about I don't remember the phrase you used, but the wildness and calling and from inside of me. That's what I want,
Yeah.
Steele.
The wild call from inside of me.
Yes, I love
That's actually going to be the title of my second book of Bobby Hurley inspired poetry.
it.
That's our To the Limits for this week. We hope you enjoy it. Two captivating stories of human beings doing incredible things on foot. The next thing we're going to bring to you is one of our favorite segments. It's small talk. Dave, you invented small talk. The purpose of small talk?
Essentially, small talk, arms you with ideas, things to talk about the next time you're in a social situation. You already have go-to topics that have prepared you. You sound more intelligent. You seem like an interesting person, even if you're not, just because you're ready with some stories.
Dave, I got the perfect one for you.
All right.
Higher education. It's in Britain. The place is called Arthur Findlay College. You know anything about it?
No, I've never heard of it.
It's been operating for about 50 years, and it offers courses for practicing psychics and mediums.
Oh, it sounds very legitimate.
Yeah, it's totally legit. The woman who runs this is a woman named Ms. Grist, and she says it's really important that they learn how to do things in the right way. She says, you can't just give information without finding out if it's right.
Mm.
If you stop and ask, they begin to believe you.
Mm.
So use yes and no questions to find out if you're on the right track. And they have an anecdote where a woman from Japan is holding a card. She's giving a reading. And she says, I feel that you will. And she gets interrupted. She says, no, no, no. We as psychics and mediums, we cannot tell the future. It's very important. There's rules
okay.
for this. You've got to do it according to the proper mode of communication here.
Okay.
And they offer a special class for people who want to communicate better with their pets, mm-hmm. both living and dead.
Ooh.
And if you take the really advanced courses, they offer some like higher level subject matter. Like they'll answer questions like, what is ectoplasm?
Egon from Ghostbusters could also answer that question.
Yeah, he could be an instructor.
Yeah.
Well, in any case, the school welcomes around 5,000 students every year. The week-long classes cost just under $1,000, but that includes your room and board.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a bad vacation idea.
No, no.
They've got a full-on library with hundreds of titles, including How to Make ESP Work for You, which is a great book. Recommend it to everyone. So basically, I just wanted to get across that there's an Arthur Findlay College. You can take classes from beginning to professional. You can sharpen your skills.
And I love the name of the school, Arthur Findlay. Like it sounds like it could be an ITT Tech. Like I could see a commercial for it on television. I'd feel a lot more comfortable with an Arthur Findlay trained psychic than just some geek off the street, you know?
Yeah. I don't know whether they give diplomas, but I imagine there's some kind of certificate program.
I would hope so. So, Steele, I have a topic.
Great.
So there's an awesome show. It's actually produced by BYU TV. It's called Turning Point. Have you ever heard of this show?
I haven't, no.
I think you would really like it. It's really interesting. Every episode, they find some kind of program that's really doing social good for people, and they talk to the person that started this program, and they kind of get to what the turning point was in this person's life where they wanted to start really making a difference, really doing good for others. And
that sounds great.
It's really inspirational. Almost every time we watch it, my wife tears up. But they do all sorts of stuff. There's one guy that takes cancer survivors on like adventure climbing trips. There's a guy that makes wheelchairs for people all over the world so that someone in India that couldn't afford a wheelchair now gets a wheelchair. There's a woman that volunteers as a lawyer to help people get out of domestic abuse situations. One of them that really kind of touched me because I'm in the medical profession is called Floating Doctors. Essentially, this guy felt like he wanted to do more, so he bought a boat and got it equipped with medical supplies, and he gets people to volunteer and go with him, and they go to Central America.
So it's like a floating hospital.
Yeah, it's amazing. They'll take this to ports, to places where normally like medical professionals don't go because they're so remote, but he can get there because he's on a boat. And they'll set up small clinics. Sometimes they'll do it in like emergency situations, but oftentimes they'll do it just to give these people primary care, and they'll go back and they'll get to know the people in the different villages. All these stories are really neat. Whenever I watch them, I feel like, man, I really need to do something with my life because these people are awesome.
That's great. That's what we need. I agree. We should do something with our lives.
Let's just do this. This is almost as good.
It's a public service for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Because it still is free. Yeah, Dave, you'll have to record the turning point. Tell people the story that made you start this podcast. I think we'll probably get to it later. I think Vin Diesel is directly responsible.
He was, so that it would not be the most inspirational episode of Turning Point, but it may be the most awesome.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, so I've got another quick thing for small talk. I won't take long on this, but this I'm actually going to recommend another podcast, one of our competitors, called Radio Diaries. It's a guy named Joe Richman, and it started, I think, maybe 15, 20 years ago. He would give high schoolers and other interesting people tape recorders, and they'd carry them around, and they'd record their own, like, documentary stories.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really cool because it was people that you didn't often hear on radio telling their own story, editing and taking control of the storytelling medium. And they still have a bunch of those great old episodes, really well produced, very insightful. But I've been listening to it lately, and one of the great stories I heard recently was about a woman named Rose Marie McCoy. And she was a songwriter basically from like the 50s on. For like 50 years, she wrote songs for Motown recording artists and all different kinds of recording artists. And she's kind of been forgotten over time, despite having written 800 pop songs over the years. Her best known song was her first number one was a song that Ike and Tina Turner recorded. It's Gonna Work Out Fine.
Darling.
Yes, Tina.
You're starting to get next to me.
Honey, that was my plan from the very beginning.
Darling.
Uh-huh.
I never thought that this could be.
What do you mean?
Oh, yeah.
She wrote songs that were recorded by Nat King Cole, Elvis, Ike and Tina Turner, James Brown, Johnny Mathis, Aretha Franklin, like these legends.
Yeah, yeah, heavy hitters.
Yeah, she grew up in a tin shack in rural Arkansas. And this Radio Diaries episode talks about her music, but it also just has a bunch of interviews with her. As a woman making it in this male-dominated music industry, as a songwriter, just a cool, colorful character, and it's got some reminiscences and just really cool audio that you just don't hear on radio. And I just would recommend that to everybody.
That's fun. Yeah. Whenever you've set up the next segment as Diesel running on gas, like it's hard for me to pay attention to anything you're saying because I'm so excited. I'm always excited about Vin Diesel. And this is kind of an emergency session because we just have a couple things we have to talk about Vin. Our friend Amy was on the podcast the other week and she emailed us this. Vin Diesel is predicting that Furious 7 is going to get nominated for an Oscar. He says, what the world won't anticipate is how emotionally powerful this movie is.
Yeah, I read that. I mean, I thought that was the money quote.
And I'm anticipating it still. I'm going to it opening night this week, and I am very excited. I can't even begin to explain to you. We were just watching something on the internet and commercials kept coming on for this movie, for this film. And my wife and I literally were tearing up as they're showing close-ups on Paul Walker's face. And Vin Diesel says, one last ride. It's going to be emotional.
So, Dave, you think it's got legitimate Oscar chances? Is it going to win Best Picture?
I think the Academy knows what it should do, but they're not going to do it. They're not brave enough. You have to be brave to like really see Furious 7 for what it is, an artistic masterpiece, and nominate it. Like, I don't think they have the balls to do it still.
Because none of the first six were nominated, is that correct?
No.
They've had six cracks at it.
And each one a travesty. I mean, you go through the years, you see what's been nominated, and you can't show me one movie better than any of these films.
It's just dreck, really. I mean, Birdman? I don't even know what that's about.
And I don't care what it's about. I care about this. I care about these characters. I care about the emotions I'm feeling.
So, Dave, usually during the Oscars, they have that montage for the stars who died in the year before.
Yeah.
Did they do that for Paul, or did they just have a special segment that was just his own hour?
I did not see the telecast, so I don't know. But I'd like to believe that, yeah, it was just a Paul Walker montage because it would be emotionally powerful. You know I love Paul. He's in our Hall of Fame, and he's going to stay there forever. He's the first person to be inducted into it.
Yeah.
But I'm not the only one that loves Paul. There's a person that loves Paul Walker more than me.
Really?
This is true. The other thing I had to talk to you about is that Vin Diesel recently became a father again.
Oh, congratulations.
His partner had a daughter, and Vin explained it as so. He said he knew that Paul Walker was in the delivery room with them, and there was no one he was thinking about more at that moment than Paul Walker as his partner is giving birth to his child.
Well, that's thoughtful of him.
And so his daughter, what do you think he could name? What could he name her? What's the option?
Well, I don't know. I was trying to make something with Walker, but maybe something with Paula?
Pretty much you got Paula or the one he went
Ooh,
with.
Pauline.
Pauline.
Paulina.
But no, he just went Pauline. And like genuinely, it makes me so happy. It makes me feel really happy. Vin Diesel is a little bit crazy. And it's awesome, and he loves Paul Walker enough to name his daughter Pauline. And I feel bad. I think he genuinely misses his friend, and I'm really anticipating this film. And I think I'm going to cry during the movie.
So, two questions. One, he names his daughter Pauline. What role, if any, do you think his partner played in this? Do you think she just gave up naming rights to Vin and like it means a lot to him? Or do you think she was on board?
Still, Paul Walker was in the room with him. She's on board. Like, it may have even been her idea. Like, she could feel the spirit of Paul, too.
Paul caught the baby.
I believe
Paul cut the cord.
He did. He bit through the cord, yeah.
So, here's my second question. Opening night.
Yes.
Are you going to the midnight showing? Or are you going to go to some other showing?
Apparently, they now do ones even before midnight. So, I'm going to the 10:30 showing.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's not even how do they call it opening day?
I'm thinking maybe it has something to do with the time zones. I don't know. I'm in the West Coast time zone now. So, yeah, on the East Coast, that's opening day. And I'm quite happy with it. I'm excited.
And who are you going with?
I'm going with a particular friend. I'm going to take my wife to it at another time. I'm going to need to see it twice in the theater at least. So
good.
This is my friend that,
plan.
Yeah, the last time I went to a car racing movie with him, we stood up and high-fived in the middle of the film. So I think there's going to be some strong emotions.
Cool. And who's driving home? I just want to be sure that you could get home safe.
I feel like Paul's going to be in the car with me, so it's going to be okay, whatever happens.
Okay. Well, that's great, Dave. Well, thanks for diesel running on gas.
Yeah.
You know, Dave, we had some questions. Ask Off the Chain gets them all the time.
Yes.
This one comes from D Game.
Yes.
From St. John's, Arizona.
I know D Game. I used to work with
this guy.
This guy is off the chain, certainly.
Okay. Well, here's his question, Dave. He says, I abhor vanity license plates. When I see them, I vandalize the vehicle. Last week, I intentionally rear-ended a shiny Corvette with the plates, your ass is last. Is there any hope for me? I don't want to continue like this. Help.
Oh, boy. D-Game, I can help you. Because I've had the same feeling in the past. Vanity license plates are ridiculous.
Wait, Dave. I've had a vanity license plate before.
What?
Yeah, it's true. Well, my ex-wife had one. It said Swiss in French, but the one she wanted, S-U-I-S-S-E, was taken, so it was S-U-1-S-S-E.
Oh, well.
And the thing is, here, a little bit more.
Okay.
We went to New Glarus, Wisconsin, which is like the Swiss capital, and we saw the car that had the original Swiss license plate.
Oh, no.
And I had a feeling that she was going to do something violent to that car. Be like, hey, this is my license plate. But, you know, time passed. I don't know if that license plate is still in commission. We're no longer connected anymore.
That's why you need a screwdriver. You always keep a screwdriver with you because you can take that plate. That should have been her plate. But I always like to be on the lookout now for nurse vanity plates.
Nice.
Like RN Forever, I've seen. Nurses love vanity plates. But the thing is, D-Game, you're looking at it in a way I understand. You're feeling very frustrated. But you just need to kind of turn your thought process just a little bit. You just need to, rather than be angry that this person is doing it, you need to see that this person is hilarious that they're doing it. This is thing in the world. You collect these. You start making a list of your favorite vanity plates of the most ridiculous people. Once you start collecting the list, once you start like actively looking for them, rather than being frustrated, you're going to be really excited the next time you see RN Forever or Teacher for Life. You want to give these people high fives when they get out of their car.
Yeah, I think it's great too, because I always think of it. I'm looking at those and I'm like, somebody's paying an extra $65 a year for that. They're contributing. I mean, like, that's tax money. Thank you. I have a nicer public park because you decided you needed this customized license plate on your car. That's great.
I've been considering for years getting the plate too fast, just the number two and then fast, but I've never pulled the trigger on it. But
would you put any extra S's in there?
Only if I had to. Still, I just want too fast. It would be a tribute to Paul Walker.
And then you drive a minivan, right?
I drive a minivan and also a Hyundai Accent.
Ooh.
Which is essentially, if you're going to buy a car for a 13-year-old girl, you would buy her my car.
I don't know why a 13-year-old girl would be driving. But
I don't know either.
That's a good car for her.
I have her car. I drive it regularly, and she probably wants it back.
Do you use phone books under the seat so you can see out over the windshield?
No, it's designed for a 13-year-old girl, Steele. It's designed for someone my size, so it's...
That's perfect.
I'm okay.
Tons of backseat seat room, huh? Leg room.
Wait. Okay, let's...
Oh, awesome.
All right, what's our next question, Steele?
Next question, Dave. This comes from RJ from North Ferriby. RJ says, what's a rectal tube anyway? Is it what it sounds like? I don't know why RJ's wondering that, but you can probably help, Dave.
So, Steele, I'm not the most skilled nurse in the world when it comes to like, getting an IV. Like, you know, I can get one, but if it's a hard one to get, I have trouble with it. I'll get someone else to help me. There's other nursing skills that I'm not the best at, but there is one that I'm really good at. That is rectal tubes.
No.
Insertion.
Are you well known on your ward for being the rectal tube master?
If someone's gonna insert one, they're like, let's get Dave. He's gonna this guy knows rectal tubes.
Wow.
But it's exactly what it sounds like, Steele. Oftentimes when a patient's intubated.
Hey, this is RJ's question.
No,
not Steele's question.
I know, but Steele, like, I can tell you're very curious as well.
Yeah, it's true.
When a person's intubated and they're on tube feeding, lots of times they'll get terrible diarrhea. So rather than let them sit in their poop and cause some real skin issues, you insert a tube up there. Usually use about two fingers, stick it in the cuff of the tube, you get them up there. And I won't get too graphic with you, Steele, but you can feel when it goes past the anal sphincter, and that's when you know it's in there far enough. And then you inflate the balloon, and it's in place. You have to flush this every, I don't know, 3 to 4 hours just to make sure everything's flowing, but it's a fantastic device. Saves skin. Everything smells better. I love them. I'm a huge fan.
So how many a week would you say you insert?
I don't work full-time right now, so it's probably every other week I'm inserting a rectal tube.
And do you ever have to come in and fix someone else's improperly inserted rectal tubes?
Man, one of the worst things, Steele, is when you go into the room and they've pooped out the tube. So the rectal tube's laying on the bed, the balloon's inflated. Like, you know they've worked to get this out. And there's just poop everywhere because they forced it out. And there's few things like more disheartening than walking into the room and that's just happened.
Oh, man. We're going to have to change the rating on our podcast. Oh. Well, RJ, all you need to know and more about rectal tubes. Thank you for writing that question. We really appreciate it. If you have any more questions for Dave, a healthcare professional, or for me, send them in to Ask Off the Chain. It's at our website. Well, Dave, it's time to show that we listen to some great tunes.
All right.
Unchained melodies.
Yes.
I thought I'll start us off this week. It's a song I've been thinking about a lot lately because it's a song about motherhood, a song about parenting. Martha Wainwright from the Wainwright family, Rufus's brother, Loudon and Kate McGarrigle's daughter. And this is a song called Everything Wrong.
Are we in record? Do you know?
It's beautiful and it's sad. And it's basically, those are the two categories that I'm looking for when I'm looking for music. So here it is.
I do most everything.
It's like, it's a really honest song about a parent's limitations and wanting to love their child, but they can't do everything for them. I don't know.
It sounded beautiful. And that's also, for some reason, becoming my wheelhouse. Women singing slow, sad songs. I don't know what's going on with me, but that's where I'm headed.
Congrats, man. Welcome.
I'm part of your club now, Steele. Well, I got one that's going to come at you from a different angle.
Great.
When I was little, we used to listen to this folk group. We'd listen to them on car rides. They're called the New Christy Minstrels. And when I was little, the song that I'm going to share with you, like, I thought it was like a tough song. I was like, whoa, this song's cool because it sounded like tough. Like, these guys are tough dudes. And as I've gotten older, I've listened to them again, and I appreciate the Christy Minstrels kind of in a different way. But this one's called El Camino Real.
Early California was a land of magnificent horses and unexcelled horsemanship. In the little-known struggle for Los Angeles, two giants, horse and master, rode together on the King's Highway, El Camino Real.
One supple brave soldier, I fear the tide of the battle has turned. The streets are deserted, the windows are dark where the bright candles burn. You must summon the soldiers with news of our plight and carry the message along through the night. And swift as the wind, you will ride to the north on the King's Highway. El Camino Real.
Yes. So Steele,
talk about tough. That song is so tough. Jeez.
I was talking to you before, but you've seen the movie A Mighty Wind.
Yeah. Love that. I love those mockumentaries.
So they definitely based the group, the new Main Street Singers, off the new Christy Minstrels. That's certain. And the spoken word, the awesome, goofy folk stuff. Now when I listen to it, like I really enjoy it, but I also listen to it kind of like a comedy album, and it's great.
That does sound great. I love those speak singing songs where they like have a spoken intro, like Donovan's Atlantis. That song's so great. All right, so Dave, my next choice. This is a guy named Afi Jervinen. Because his name is Afi Jervinen, he records under a different name. He was the guitarist for Feist, though, so people have heard his sound. He's from Canada. He's a Canuck. And he records under the name Bahamas.
Oh, nice.
And this is a song called Lost in the Light that I really liked lately.
I'm lost in the light. I pray for the night to take me to. After so many words, still nothing's heard. Don't know what we should do. So if someone could see me now, let them see you. It was my greatest thrill when we just stood still. Let me hold your hand till I have my fill. Even counting sheep don't help me sleep. I just toss and turn right there beside you. So if someone could help me now, they'd help you too. They help you too. See you through all the hard things we've all gotta do. Cause this life is long, and so you wouldn't be wrong. Being free, leaving me on my own.
That's Bahamas, Dave.
I'll give him a go. I'll throw him on the playlist for my homework afternoon this afternoon.
That's great. So the thing for me, when I first heard him, I thought it was M. Ward, one of my favorite musicians. He sounds really, really similar, both in vocal timbre and in his guitar playing.
Mm-hmm.
But like really nice, sweet, catchy pop music. He's a good guy.
Well, I've got one more for you, Steele.
I'm so excited.
This is one of my favorite bands. Have you listened? You know The National?
I do, yeah.
My wife and I, probably our combined forces, this is our favorite band together. We've seen them a few times, and I love his voice. I love the music. A few years ago, we were in Europe with my whole family, and we rented this large van. All seven or eight of us were in this van driving around Europe, and whenever it just got a little bit too real for me in the van, I needed a break. I threw my headphones on, and I listened to this song.
I know you're a serious lady, living off a teacup full of cherries. Nobody knows where you are living, nobody knows where you are. Take a bath and get high through an apple. Wanted to cry, but you can't when you're laughing. Nobody knows where you are living, nobody knows where you are. You're so far around the bend. You're so far around the bend. I'll run through a thousand parties. I'll run through 1 million bars. Nobody knows where you are living. Nobody knows where you are. Been humming in a haze forever. Praying for payment to get back together. Nobody knows where you are living. Nobody knows where you are. You're so far around the bend. You're so far around the bend.
I love that song. It's not on any of their albums. It just didn't fit whatever track listings they were doing. but it's just fantastic. I love his voice. I would love to sing that song to my daughters, but I don't. I'm not man enough. My voice isn't low enough. It's too hard.
Yeah, he's got such a unique voice. Really great. Yeah.
Great band. Really good live. I love the National. Anything they do makes me happy.
So that's our music for the week. Unchained Melodies. Dave, the time for this episode has come to an end. And with that, we need to lay on some book wisdom.
Yes.
I'm going to share a passage from one of my favorite books of all time. It was by a French author from the 16th century. His name was Michel de Montaigne. Everyone knows him as Montaigne now. And he wrote a book called Essays. And he's the man who invented the essay. It's a French word. It comes from the verb essayer, which means to try. So he wrote these little attempts or his thoughts on all these various subjects. And the beginning of this book, he writes a little preface that's addressed to the reader. He says, "Reader, thou hast here an honest book. It doth, at the outset, forewarn thee that in contriving the same, I have proposed to myself no other than domestic and private end. I have had no consideration at all either to thy service or to my glory. My powers are not capable of any such design. I have dedicated it to the particular commodity of my kinsfolk and friends, so that having lost me, which they must do shortly, they may therein recover some traits of my conditions and humors, and by that means preserve more whole and more lifelike the knowledge they had of me. Had my intention been to seek the world's favor, I should surely have adorned myself with borrowed beauties. I desire therein to be viewed as I appear in mine own genuine, simple, and ordinary manner, without study and artifice, for it is myself I paint. My defects are therein to be read to the life, and any imperfections are my natural form, so far as public reverence hath permitted me. If I had lived among those nations, which they say yet dwell under the sweet liberty of nature's primitive laws, I assure thee I would most willingly have painted myself quite fully and quite naked. Thus, reader, myself am the matter of my book. There's no reason thou should employ thy leisure about so frivolous and vain a subject. Therefore, farewell."
I love that the approach, the humility that he approaches to what he's doing. I think...
Me too. Very,
I think we always feel like the ideas we have to share are so profound and so great, and we're going to change everybody's lives by what we're doing. So I wish that we could approach stuff more like that.
Yeah, I love that. When I first read that, I thought, there's not a lot of books from the 16th century that I'm really interested in reading, but this is one of them. And I was like, yeah, this is a mind or human life that I would be interested in becoming friends with and learning from their book. And I love the book.
Thanks, Steele. I liked it.
Hey, you're welcome, Dave. Talk to you again soon.
All right, I'll talk to you later, man.
Off the chain. It's off the chain.
So my wife gave me some constructive feedback. She says that when I get excited, I would just be like, let's get Dave. This guy knows rectal tubes.
Okay.
You'll have to like hold up your hands and start waving because I won't want to stop. The rectal tube's laying on the bed. The balloon's inflated. Like, you know they've worked to get this out, and there's just poop everywhere. So I'm going to try and be a little more aware of that.